Welcome, everybody. This is Greg Winches from The Greg Winches Show. My guest today is a doctor in Bangkok. His name is Kanwar Singh, S-I-N-G-H. And he's actually my doctor when I come here to Bangkok to get my health check. And I'm excited to tell you about his work because I think this resource of being able to get a health check in Bangkok is so valuable because you can do almost, I call it a full body scan, where they screen just many different components of your body to see if it's in good health, and something might be out of range, and you know, it's asymptomatic. You wouldn't even know it unless you did some screening tests, and it's very affordable here in Bangkok. You know, you can get basically the maximum package for about $500, and something very, very valuable also, maybe not the maximum, but something in the order of $350, $400. And you can get this all done in one day. You can fly in, fly out, same day even if you want to, and then get the results also in that same day. And the health checkup includes sort of scanning your blood, all kinds of different components of your blood, like the thyroid, white blood cells, lipid panel, cholesterol, all kinds of different things in your blood. Checking for tumor markers like the PSA. But then even as far as doing a chest x-ray to see if there's anything going on there in your lungs or in your spine or something, and even an EKG. So they'll put in these sort of electrodes on your chest, and as you run on a treadmill, they sort of increase the speed of that treadmill and also the incline, so it gets kind of harder and harder, and in that way they can sort of check to see if your heart's in good health, if there's any maybe blockage in your blood flow. And so I've actually personally been doing those checkups for 3 years now, I believe. And after you do those tests, then you get to meet a doctor, and the doctor interprets those results for you. So the doctor that's helped me to interpret my results is Dr. Kanwar Singh. And I invited him to be on the guest today, as a guest today on the show, because I just think that, you know, pretty much every American should consider Bangkok as a resource to them in their healthcare. So the medical system is sort of so expensive in America, and you know, you can basically get services equal or even better in some cases in Bangkok at, you know, one-tenth, one-eighth the price. A lot of people don't know that in the U.S. And so I'm hoping that my interview with Dr. Singh will help sort of introduce you to what's possible if you fly all the way over to Bangkok and access the medical care here too. Also, something to keep in mind is flights from California to Bangkok can be as low as $650, $800 round trip. So oftentimes that flight costs plus your medical expenses will be lower by coming to Bangkok than doing something out in California or somewhere in America. So just to give you a little background on Dr. Singh, he got a bachelor's of medicine back in 1974 at Tamalpur University in India, I believe. Dr. Singh also got a medical degree at Mahiolald University, which is in Thailand, and then also in Ramathibodi Hospital in 1979, sort of different subspecialty medical degrees. I had a bit of a technical error in recording this interview, so it only recorded the interview that was nearest, or it only recorded through the microphone that was nearest to me, so you hear my voice really nicely, but Dr. Singh's voice sounds a bit far away. I apologize for that technical error. I think this the interview is still very, very valuable, and certainly worth listening to kind of gather the information. And it's just I fly out on Friday to Stockholm. I'm currently in Bangkok, and I'm not going to really get another chance to do another interview in the near future with Dr. Singh, because I'll be out of town. But I really wanted to publish this interview anyways on the podcast, and I think you should get a lot of value from it. Thank you very much, and without further ado, Dr. Kanwar Singh.
Well, in Thailand, the health check is one of the very, very common nowadays. Many people fly over from many countries, and now this is called what is medical tourism. They come for the health check, they have a nice holiday, go to the beach and do everything, and yet the money they spend for everything is much less than what if they had just gone for a health checkup in their own country. Previously, Singapore used to be the target for the health check, because most of the hospitals which were JCIA accredited were mostly in Singapore. But for the last, I would say, 6 to 7 years, many, many hospitals all over Thailand have got the JCIA accreditation. Singapore always had an edge over us because of the better English language, but which has overcome lately, quite significantly, I would say. And at the moment, the language capability, the facilities available here and in Singapore are almost alike. And lots of people fly here for the cost factor, because this place happens to be around 40% cheaper than in Singapore. But Thailand and Singapore are both regarded a center of medical excellence as far as medical care is concerned, irrespective of how critical it may be. I don't know if I get to your point or no.
Well, I'm just kind of exploring the field, I've been sort of empirically exploring medical tourism just by doing it myself. Like, for example, earlier today, I got a filling on my tooth. So actually, my face is a little numb right here, so that's why maybe my smile is a little off. But my filling on the tooth was something like $30 for a single filling, whereas in America, you know, it might be $300. If you can access quality healthcare, and it's, you know, one-tenth the price, but yet just as good a quality, it sort of opens up sort of access to health and improved sort of quality of life for so many people. But they just need to have kind of the confidence that it's going to be sort of high enough quality, and they, you know, they won't come over here and you know, get hurt themselves and sort of regret not staying within their own country. I noticed, for example, that there are a lot of Middle Eastern people, like Saudi Arabia people, all over the Bangkok hospitals, or even Bumrungrad, are wearing gowns, and you can tell they're just really authentically coming from the Middle East. But then they flew over here. Could you help me understand why that is? Why there's just such a huge flow of Middle Easterns?
Yes, that's a very good question, and we have tried to venture many times. I personally feel that I've been personally to Dubai, and I've seen the hospitals there. The equipment is excellent. If you see the credentials of the doctors, most of them are American born. Most of them are American born. Very good credentials. Why do all the Middle Eastern people come and flow over here? Number one could be the factor, cost factor. And number two is the hospitality factor, which they lack in those countries. The Thailand is very, very famous for its hospitality. To say no to a patient is practically impossible to hear in a place like Thailand especially. And I personally feel why they flock over here, they save a lot of money because it's a cost effective And on top of that, they get a lot of hospitality, which is not possible in your own country. As far as the equipment is concerned, the doctor credentials are concerned, I am more than impressed what they have in Dubai. I don't know about other places, but I've personally been to many hospitals in Dubai. And yet I have lots of patients coming from Dubai to Bangkok Hospital, to Bumrungrad Hospital, and a lot of them even fly over to Singapore.
Exactly. So there's something, I agree with you on the hospitality factor. I just love walking into the hospital here in Bangkok and seeing so many smiling staff. And it just it makes me kind of feel warm and welcome and like I want to be here. This hospital isn't a sort of a depressing place. It's a place where I feel like I can go to, kind of want to hang out more and enjoy my sort of health check procedures. Can we talk about also health checks,
Okay, before we go to that, let me give you a very good example. A few years back, I was invited as a guest speaker for a conference on medical tourism in Taiwan. And I had a colleague of mine from Singapore. He talked of all high-tech, everything they have in Singapore. And then I was on the podium. He had talked practically everything high-tech I was supposed to speak. And I had nothing else to add on top of that. So what I said to them was, well, my colleagues have talked everything and that's very high-tech and I fully agree on that. But patient doesn't just need a high-tech. The patient needs something more than high-tech. And I can assure you that the Chinese will take 100 years to learn the Thai smile and Thai hospitality.
Yeah.
And this will take 100 years for the Taiwanese or for the Singaporean Chinese to learn from Thailand. And we always will keep an edge over this for the coming many, many years. And there was a big laughter in the hall. Because Thai hospitality, you have to admit, it outbeats any of the Asian countries.
Absolutely.
Not to talk about the West or in America. Asian countries are as it is, they're very hospitable. And then Thai hospitality tops all among the Asian countries.
Absolutely.
I can assure you on that factor. Okay, let's come over to your checkup question. I didn't get it.
I want to talk about sort of the benefits of health checkup. Like for example, in something like 20 years of sort of dealing with the American medical system, no doctor ever suggested doing sort of a big body scan to scan a lot of different sort of biomarkers like the thyroid, the TSH, the cholesterol, the panels, and yet this type of kind of executive health check, full screening body scan, is available here in Bangkok. I've personally been getting a lot of confidence knowing that I'm just really healthy in all these sort of different aspects. And, maybe later down the road, if I'm sick, I'll be able to kind of compare my results to, now when I'm healthy and sort of look at the difference. Can you tell me about sort of the history of this idea of the executive health check, screening process available here?
Yes, we have actually divided into different forms. Once you enter the hospital, you are given a form and then you are supposed to meet a doctor. Doctor will take your background history, your lifestyle and all the things, and then make a decision. This is one factor to make a decision, which type of checkup you need. And second is age related. We have classified a vital check for young people up to 20 years. They really don't need very sophisticated tests, but they just need vital signs are good, they are not anemic, they are not having any problem with their lipids or anything. Their livers are good, kidneys are good. In Thailand, the tuberculosis is very popular and you can be asymptomatic for many years. Do you have an abnormal chest x-ray? You can take care of it before the problem really arises. So this is just a basic checkup. We call it a vital checkup. then go a little more advanced care, which is above the certain age group, we call it around 30s. And then that will help to do the ultrasound, do the other basic, other necessary tests for that pertaining age. And then your lifestyle. You're taking a lot of alcohol, smoking a lot of cigarettes, we had some additional tests. Once you're in the range of 40s, that's a critical age. The problems do start arising then. And there we advise you should have an executive checkup. But let me tell you, the checkups should not lead that if everything is normal, you are free from all everything. These are screening tests based on what are the majority problems in the society, not pertaining to one particular person. So you need to discuss your medical issues with the doctor, and the doctor makes a decision for you which is the ideal for you, based on the age factor and your lifestyle. And then we also have one, we call it ultimate checkup. These are very sophisticated names, it looks very big things, but I think it covers a lot of basic gross tests which may be necessary in the age of 50s or 60s, 60 plus.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So for
you're talking about the scans, ultrasound scan and all is one thing one can accept. But yeah, I get a lot of American patients, they want a full PET scan, full body PET scan. I very much am against for it, and I do not agree for it. Because these scan should only be done if you have a clue or you have got something to suspect. After all, we are dealing with shadows. And if I do a full PET scan on you, you have got nothing, and there's an abnormal shadow somewhere, you'll get paranoid. You'll get sick, more sick than one before you came to me.
Just worry about it.
This is more worrisome. And little abnormal shadow, which doesn't mean really anything, to you it'll mean a lot, it'll change your lifestyle, and it'll make you paranoid. I get a lot of young Americans coming to me, doctor, I want a full body scan. Okay. That's the doctor's decision to make. You tell me what are your health issues. I talk to them like that. I'll be the one to suggest to what scan you need. You don't have to do the total body scan. So when you're doing the checkups, you have to be very careful of that. Not that you
kind of false positive.
Your confidence is restored.
Yeah.
Not that you after you do the checkup and you become a paranoid. That's another issue which one should take very carefully.
Yes. There's kind of a aspect of sort of maybe over testing or over screening if it's detecting sort of false positives in a way that or maybe they asymptomatic and it actually doesn't need.
Yeah, but that's only a clue we are getting to. We are not putting a diagnosis on that. If we get some clue, then we go for the confirmatory tests. What these checkups are, they are only screening tests.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that if something is abnormal and you have got that particular disease, that gives us the channel where to go, where to head, and what to proceed.
Right.
Because if you do all the checkups possible, I feel that checkups will never finish. You may finish before the checkups end, you know. Your life may end before the checkups will ever end.
Right.
So that's not the way. It's just a screening and lead the way where we need to go.
Mm-hmm.
One abnormality, then we have a confirmatory test, going ahead with that, concentrating on that particular thing.
And I know your background comes from India.
I was actually born here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Got it. Okay. So you didn't spend time in India?
My mother's from there. I go there off and on. But
okay, got it. I did my
post graduation from here. I was in the Army Hospital.
I see. Okay. And
some training abroad and all that. But
my brother-in-law is Indian, actually, and his brother-in-law, in fact, decided to sort of donate money to build a hospital in India, and he's especially interested in hypothyroid because he personally suffers from hypothyroid, and he started taking the thyroid medicine and it really just improved his energy, and he said there's just tens of thousands of undiagnosed hyperthyroid problems in India, even that sort of village that he's most interested in. And I'm kind of curious about, this executive health check. You know, it's certainly been a benefit to me. I'm wondering, do you just kind of in your view, do you think these sort of screenings, health screenings, would be super beneficial in, say, Indian villages, and sort
not
of catch
a lot? Indian villages, I would say even in Thailand, we pick up a lot of people who are healthy. They've got no symptoms. We pick up their diabetics, mm-hmm. asymptomatic diabetics.
Mm-hmm.
We pick up a lot of people who are hypothyroid. They don't know they have got a hypothyroid.
Yeah.
There are many people, they've got fairly severe hypothyroid. And while interviewing the patients, we pick up they need a psychiatric evaluation. They're very depressed. The quality of life is very poor.
Yeah.
When you interact with the patient, you pick up a lot of things. It's the, and a lot of them, and at the, when they come for checkup, they are mostly asymptomatic. And idea of this checkup is to pick up something when the things are not bloomed up. And
exactly.
That is the basic idea of checkup.
Well, thyroid...
I've picked up a lot of TB cases who are asymptomatic.
Whoa.
Because this is an endemic area for tuberculosis.
Mm.
I picked up lots of abnormal chest x-rays, so much so that they start distrust the doctor at times. I have got no symptom, and how the hell you're telling me that I've got tuberculosis and I need to see a chest specialist.
Wow.
I pick up a lot of diabetics. They have a family history of diabetics, but they are asymptomatic. So I've got no symptom. So that's very good you had a checkup done. And the things can be sorted out in a better way before there's a complication, the damage to the...
It's kind of a prevention.
And organs and organs, yeah. You give them a diabetic education and make the life much better. Otherwise, if we did not go for these checkups, they will come up when they have symptoms and probably some complications. It may be too late.
Exactly. So the checkups and the screenings really help you catch problems earlier and then prevent long-term damage.
And the cost involved is so minimal that it really doesn't affect the people's pocket. In Thailand, I've seen people are very checkup-oriented. There's a lot of this thing, educational, going on for a checkup, at least a yearly checkup, if not yearly, once every 2 years. Unlike in Europe. In Europe, it's not so common. In America, it's not so common.
Right.
But in Thailand, in relatively, I've seen in the, Thailand is very common. That's my experience.
I visited some of the temples in Thailand, not on this trip, but on past trips. And the it seems there in Thailand there's sort of a legacy of sort of the medicine man being kind of an icon, you know, up there with the emperor. In one of the temples, I just remember seeing a smiling, happy medicine man. Would you say that Thailand in particular really emphasizes, you know, health and well-being, like massage, compared to other Asian countries?
Spas, there are a lot of spas and the herbal treatments, but then this is called alternative medicine. We don't call it a part of the medicine. I get a lot of inquiries, like chiropractors itself, chiropractic in Thailand is a part of an alternative medicine. There are lots of spas, herbal treatments, herbal drugs, everything is a part of the alternative medicine. It's not part of the regular medicine, which is we practice. We practice modern medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And how much role it has, I really cannot update you much on that because I'm not into it.
Got it. And then would you say a lot of the doctors here in Bangkok are board certified in America? I think I've seen some cases of that.
I think in our hospital itself, more than 60%, I would say, the American board certified.
Nice. So that's another kind of element of confidence to give, along with the JCI certification. Have you considered practicing medicine in any other countries, or are you planning on sticking with Thailand?
No. After I did my post-graduation, I was working in Bumrungrad Hospital. Then I shifted over here and I went for some training in aviation medicine in France. And then I went for training here and there. I never thought of really changing. I was in New York for some time, but I never fell in love with it.
Mm.
I decided to come back home, and I feel much more comfortable. Maybe I don't make as much money, but I get a lot of peace of mind, and I feel much, much at home. My brother is a neurosurgeon in the United States. He makes a lot of money, but I think I'm leading a much better life than him.
Yes.
That's my feeling. He's always under stress, always under some. But I'm very relaxed, and I keep myself going much, much smoother than
enjoying
than him. I don't envy him at all.
I hear you on that. I'm kind of curious, do you ever do any outreach to sort of Thai communities or sort of to try to do health scanning, screening, checkups to sort of Thai, like, rice villages and, say, Isan?
Well, our hospital does it, not me, because I'm more in the hospital-oriented medicine. But our hospital has some camps for the community health. And I'm more involved in the expatriate healthcare. I give a lot of lectures on how to stay healthy in Thailand. Especially the expatriates, when they come to Thailand, they're paranoid of everything. And you have to give them a real good teaching to make them feel more at home and relaxed. So yeah. I give very often the lectures on to the expatriate community about how to stay healthy in Thailand.
Yeah, that,
I'm more involved, more with the foreigners rather than the local Thai community.
That's a really good point. I actually, when I do come to Thailand and the Philippines, I always feel nervous about sort of health risks. Actually, especially traffic and cars. I feel really worried about getting hit by a car. This isn't Thailand. This is Manila. I had an experience where it was nighttime and I was trying to cross an intersection, and I had a green light. I was supposed to be allowed to cross, but one of the oncoming sort of traffic to my left, this truck crossed the double line and then sped up and ran out of red light and sort of narrowly missed me, hitting me in the car. So it kind of makes me scared to see people not following traffic laws when I can't really predict as well. I know in Thailand, Bangkok especially, there's a major traffic problem near Sukhumvit. But would you say, car accidents, traffic is actually a major health risk here, like all the motorcycles?
It's more on the islands in the south. We do a lot of medical repatriations, evacuations from the islands with a motorcycle accident. Of all the repatriations, evacuations done in Thailand from the other parts of Thailand, like beaches in the south, in the north, 80% are motorcycle accidents. The reason being, they are young people, backpackers. When they come down to these countries, drunk driving, there's not much, very strict laws about drunk driving. License is not so important, seat belts are not so important. Then on top of that, here we drive on the left, in their own country they drive on the right. And when they have taken a couple of drinks, you forget that which part of the world you're driving in.
Yeah.
These are all the factors which make it. And we get lots and lots of motorcycle accidents. That's very unfortunate, but that's what I've been seeing. I'm practicing in this hospital for 30 years, and I've seen lots and lots of, and the number has not significantly decreased either.
Yeah,
try all sorts of things, but the end point, the number is almost the same every year.
Yes, motorcycles are very dangerous. I came from Stanford University, that's where I studied, and Stanford Hospital, they have a nickname for motorcycles, and that's donor cycles, because they really make perfect donors, because they fall off their bike and hit their head, and they're dead, but the rest of their organs are healthy, and they're young.
That's correct. I agree on that. But in America, people are a lot ignorant about the facilities in Asian countries. I had recently, 4 or 5 weeks back, I got a call from United States in the middle of the night. I was sleeping, 3 o'clock at night. Somebody called me from East Coast in United States, and he got my reference from a friend of his, and he got my telephone number, and I picked up. I like to talk to Dr. Singh. Yes, I'm Dr. Singh speaking. How can I help you? I've got a question for you. My father is 78 years old. He's an asthmatic. He's planning to be in Thailand in another 3 to 4 months, and he wants to go all over Thailand. But he has an underlying bronchial asthma. My question to you is, do you have any Western-trained doctors in Thailand who can look after his bronchial asthma? It was in the middle of the night. I was almost sleepy. I was about to say, I'm so sorry to say, we only have barefoot doctors here.
Barefoot doctors. Yeah.
Then I tried to keep myself at ease. I got very angry, but I talked nicely. So I said, you know what I suggest you? You should go up on the website and see what the medical facilities in Thailand are.
Right.
If you're not clear on, after reading the website, I gave him a few names of the websites of the hospitals, please do call me back to clarify on certain status. Because your question that do you have any Western-trained doctors, I find it absolutely vague and I really don't know how to answer it, to be very honest.
Right.
I'm just giving you the example how ignorant one can be. They see the atlas and they see the map on Thailand, underdeveloped country.
Right.
Point there. Maybe there's no Western trained doctor.
It's true. Actually, before I came here, you know, when I was visualizing Bangkok, you know, I was picturing, you know, Indiana Jones, the movie, sort of, kind of with sort of crawling through the jungle and finding, you know, basically barefoot people like you're describing. But then, you know, when I, for example, went to Bumrungrad and I saw the beautiful stainless steel, you know, pillars in the buildings and like, you know, it's almost like a 5-star hotel. You walk up to say, endocrinology and, you know, there's a beautiful reception. You look out the window and you see the city and you're up on the 20th floor and, you know, the doctors are so sharp and many of them know English very well and like many, many smiling nurses and staff. And, you know, even the electronic health records here in Bangkok, some of the hospitals, they're superior to what I was seeing at Stanford. You know, I went to the dentist just today and I got an x-ray of my teeth because they wanted to explore how it's doing. And instantly the x-ray showed up at my doctor's computer and he's examining it and looking to see if there's a cavity and ready to make sort of a good quick decision about what to do next. So, but then also I think the cost of labor is lower, much lower here in Thailand. And so the hospitals are able to actually have like a huge amount of staff. So all that staff, they're keeping the facilities clean. You know, honestly, it's very dirty in some hospitals I'm seeing in America. And it's partly because the cost of the staff is so high, whereas, you know, you can have lots of people available to help out here in Thailand. I want to ask you next about, or what actually on to carry on with that idea of like, you know, what are the risks of health, you know, living here in Thailand? What are the health risks you're most concerned about here in Thailand?
Pollution.
Pollution, yeah.
That is one of the very big health risks.
From cars, basically, the traffic,
the air. Yeah, and dust also, perfume vapors, petrol vapors. And number two is the hygiene of the food.
Mm.
Food hygiene is another concern.
Yeah, like street food.
The hygiene is not up to the level of international level, I would still say. Mm. We get lots of people with gastroenteritis.
Yeah.
We people have been staying here for many years and our immunity system is much better. We don't suffer. I take you for a food on a roadside. I'll be taking as much as you, maybe double than you. I'll have nothing, but you'll come out with a gastroenteritis the next day. Because your immune system is not developed, because you people are getting too clean food.
Right.
That is the difference. So it's a concern.
It's almost like, you know, in America, if your sister gets chicken pox, your mom might tell you, oh, you know, go kiss your sister and get chicken pox. So that you get chicken pox as a kid and sort of get exposed and immune to it before you become an adult, because maybe that chicken pox can be worse for you if you're an adult. So it's like a... deconditioning to some of the environmental pollutions and disease. And I mean, are you personally sort of afraid to drink the water here in Thailand because of worry about bacteria, or you mainly drink bottled water when you're here?
I always drink bottled water, and as I told you, I have a how to stay healthy in Thailand. I preach very strongly about the bottled water. Don't drink the tap water. But then again, I have done a study. I went to the plant for the water treatment plant, and it is excellent. It's above the international standard, I would say. But again, when the water comes to your tap, the problem arises in the pipes. Pipes are not so clean, and that is the source of bacteria, not the plant. Plant outbeats many of the Western countries. It's so sophisticated and well water treatment plant itself. The problem lies in the pipes which are supplying that water when it comes from the. So overall, the water is a big risk. And I always advocate, even among Thai people, they also know about this. They can't afford bottled water, but yet they boil the water and keep it, store it, and then they drink it. Okay. This is among the major trend among many Thai people. They boil the water and keep it.
Now, back on the topic of medical tourism, you mentioned that phone call you got in the middle of the night when somebody was asking you about, you know, are there Western-trained doctors available in Bangkok? And you mentioned going to the websites of the hospitals to sort of explore what facilities they have and what doctors are available and where they were trained even. And I noticed that on some of the Bangkok hospitals' websites, you know, they have a full directory with, like, their medical school they went to, a number of years in practice, even their photo. And so you can actually get a lot of information by just going to the website, and even price lists, like how much exactly is a procedure going to cost. And that's just fantastic, because in America, there's not that level of transparency. You know, you walk into the hospital and you have no idea what they're going to bill you. You know, like an ER visit might easily be like $5,000. but it's different in Thailand. They have transparency.
This is a part of the JCIE accreditation too. You have to be clear with the patient how much you're going to charge him.
Okay.
So that he makes a decision whether he wants treatment with you or he wants to go elsewhere.
Yep.
That's very important. In any surgery, unless it is life-threatening, we get the approval from the patient or his family that we can go ahead with the surgery or not. Exception being only life-threatening situations. No surgery is ever conducted without the signatures of the patient or the relatives.
Consent, yeah.
Of course, exception, as I'm telling you repeatedly, life-threatening, we go ahead, we don't wait.
Yeah.
We have a special department, they call estimator department. They prepare the itemized statement. What is what and what costs what? And what is the doctor's fee? What is the operation room fee? What are the medications? Give you a basic idea. It's an itemized complete statement to let you know.
That's super helpful. And even not only estimates after the doctor already told you what you might need, but actually directories of price lists that you can look up, like, for example, for the dentist.
It may not be very accurate, but it gives you an idea.
Yeah, just some idea. Yeah, exactly. And actually, even I was hearing, even in America, health insurance companies are starting to try to incentivize Americans instead of sticking with some of the super expensive American hospitals, but fly them over to Thailand and Singapore to be treated, because the cost of the flight plus procedure can be less than, even much less than, a procedure in the U.S. Actually, I was talking to my doctor, and he was saying, like, say, for example, a cardiac bypass, you know, that might be $100,000 in America, but, you know, maybe $10,000 here, $8,000.
That's great.
And yet, good enough quality, but maybe even better quality because of, for example, the staff that's available to help you with the recovery period.
Well, that's correct. But you have to compare many things in that. When you say it's cheap here, don't forget the cost of living is also much cheaper here than in America. You compare the cost of McDonald's in America and cost compare the cost of McDonald's in Thailand, there's a vast difference.
Oh yeah, and even like the high
cost of living makes a lot of difference.
Absolutely. Even the high end of living, you know, in Bangkok, I stayed at a 5-star hotel and it was only $60 a night. Whereas a 5-star hotel,
$500.
$500, yeah, in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Or New York. And so you kind of, you can almost live, this is kind of an exaggeration, but you can almost live like a rock star in Thailand for, you know, a mediocre middle class budget that you'd have back in America.
I give you an example of this very well. We have got a place in Hua Hin on the beach, and there we have lots of Scandinavians in hundreds. They are retired, they get pension, and they are long-term citizens there, long-term visas they have got. And when they get sick, they come here and I ask them, why the hell you don't want to go home? You have been here for so long and all that. And many of them, they told me the same thing. Since the pension which we get, we can hardly make the ends meet when we are in Scandinavia. But here, with the pension which we are getting, we can live like kings here.
Yeah.
Why the hell I should go back?
Yes.
That was the logic they gave me.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right? Because I also used to wonder that why they never go home. You have to come in a polluted place, stay for such a long time. Why? So I interviewed a lot of them and I got a common answer. Because the amount of pension they get, they can hardly make the ends meet there. It's just difficult.
Yeah.
And here they can lead a life of a king.
Exactly.
With so many people serve you all the time.
Yeah, and it's less stress when
yes.
you're... It like, you know, in California, you know, rent in San Francisco is huge,
it's
huge,
crazy, yeah.
Easily $3,000-$4,000 a month. And you feel maybe worried about going homeless for not having enough money for simple rent. Whereas, you know, if you're in Thailand, you can get a nice house on the beach, like you're saying.
Yes, that's correct.
And even access medical care if you get sick. So that's always a major stressor in America is what if you get sick? Like, then you have this huge medical bill you might be facing and, you know, could literally die because you couldn't access medical care. Now, to kind of follow up further with this idea of, like, what are the best hospitals? How can you access the best medical care? Like, we've kind of established you can have some confidence about the medical resources, medical care available by, say, looking at JCI certification of the hospitals, but is there any kind of ranking of, like, you know, you don't want to just go for kind of mediocre or like good enough healthcare, but you want to get the best healthcare. Do you know of any kind of?
I personally, this is my personal viewpoint, because there's a good and bad everywhere, and I think you should have a proper referral before you're going to see a doctor. It's very, very important, and then you compare the statistics. Okay, in this hospital has done how many bypass surgeries for the heart? What is the success rate? Another B facility, how many have they done? What is the success rate? And try to compare these. Then you see the accreditation. Then choosing the doctor, you must take a proper referral. You have to go to a doctor whom you can trust and you can ask him that, can you refer me a good pediatrician, good surgeon, a good gastroenterologist. That makes a lot of difference. As I told you, there are good and bad everywhere. All over the world, there's good and bad. There's no place which is comprised of all good, and there's no place comprised of all bad.
Where do you get that good referral in the first place?
Pardon?
The referral? You mentioned the importance of the referral, right?
Yeah.
How can you get that good referral in the first place? Like,
you have to interview a few doctors and isolate whom you feel you can trust. It's a matter of trust. And then you go to that particular doctor and talk to him that I want a good gastroenterologist referral. Whom would you recommend? This is, I think, the best way to approach.
And how do you?
I would not like to go to the hospital and just go to any duty doctor ABC. No, I wouldn't do that.
Right. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Now, how do you also get the data? Like you mentioned, looking up the number of cardiac bypasses previously performed at Hospital X. Can you go to that hospital and ask?
Yes, you can go into the, there is a, the, okay, what they call it, the committee there, and you would like, you can talk to them that, okay, in this hospital, since when have they started doing the bypass surgery? How many cases have been done? What is the success rate? What is the complication? These are all documented data. They cannot fool you in that.
Right.
This is all in the open.
So you can make decisions.
There's a particular name of the committee, I'm forgetting that, which exists in all hospitals, and they tell you.
And that's sort of a Thailand-specific database?
Database, yeah.
I see. So in Thailand, there's kind of a regulatory agency that sort of enforces this kind of data to be collected about complication rate, success rate.
Yes.
And you can, as a patient, you can look at that data.
That's your right. That's the patient's right to look at the data before making a decision.
And basically the idea is like the more procedures a hospital performs, probably the better they are because they have better resources, more doctors, more experience. And then as far as evaluating...
If a hospital has performed 3 operations in 6 months for the bypass, I would not like to go there.
Right.
There maybe.
Right.
Public surgeon, maybe. I would not be very comfortable getting operated there.
Right.
A hospital which is performing 3 to 4 cases every day, I would rather go there. I expect that everybody, all the staff from level A to level Z, they're all experienced from this.
Right.
If you're performing 3 operations in 6 months, I don't expect anybody knows ABC about it.
Exactly, because it's not just the doctor with experience,
it's
but also the staff.
Maybe the paramedical...
administrative staff.
Staff and the paramedics and everything, and the nursing staff, operation room staff. There's a lot of people involved in such surgery.
Exactly.
You have to put many things together to make a decision.
Right.
You have to go.
Right. And then looking at which doctor is best too, you know, for example, number of years of experience is a good predictor of if they're good.
But yeah, then you can see the, what they call it, from the website, you can see the credentials of the doctor. And then you have isolated few doctors in that. And then you need to talk to your own doctor whom you trust. Supposing you have come to me, you trust me. You come and ask me, I'm going to get a cardiac surgery done. I've isolated few doctors, 1, 2, 3, whom would you recommend? And I'll be very happy to tell you my experience because I am working here for 30 years. I would know more than what you would know.
Right. So it's almost like conducting sort of a survey.
So
you isolate, say, 5 or 10 doctors or maybe 3 that you think might have the right specialization as a patient.
Because initial homework you have to do, you have to go through the credentials and then see how it is.
Yes. And then
you can ask somebody.
Then you can go to other doctors. So it's almost like a peer review system.
Yes.
So like you're conducting a survey, peer review.
Because it's your body and you're going to be operated and you have to do all sorts of research on that. If I'm at your place, I would do all that.
Exactly.
Because it's my body.
Yes.
And I would like to get the best available.
Right.
And that's the way how you will get best available.
Exactly.
I just can't walk into the hospital and let ABC do anything he wants. As I told you earlier, there's a good and bad everywhere.
Yes, that's right.
Because no hospital will say that we are bad, we are only good only. But this is my personal view, there's a good and bad everywhere.
Yeah.
In the best hospitals in the United States, you can get good and bad.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I when I was talking to Dr. Grossman in my last interview, he mentioned a top sort of killer of patients. I believe it's number 3 in America of ranking in the kills, is something called endogenic disease, which basically means it's a medical error. So in America, I think the top killer is cancer, then heart disease, and then number 3 is medical error, where, you know, for example, the staff makes a mistake and then
iatrogenic.
Okay, iatrogenic. Okay, not endogenic, but iatrogenic. Okay.
The hospital induced
disease or illness or basically error.
Well, this is one of the top killers. I'm not so aware of that. It is one of the common things, but I would not still rank as a top killer.
As a top, okay, okay.
I would not rank as yet.
Okay.
Because there are lots of mitigations and all that, and I think it is medical negligence is something which has to be minimized everywhere, and everybody is very scared.
Yes.
Everybody is very scared because, and especially in the United States, where the litigation factories are very, very on the top, you know.
Yes, very. It's very easy to
sue someone.
You know,
what is the principle of practice in the United States? Patient lives or dies. That's not of my concern. My documents are good or no. That's very important.
Right.
My documents are accurate. That is my end.
Right.
You live or die. That's your problem.
Right. It's kind of like...
Which I'm not very much in favor of.
It's
because the doctor-patient relationship is very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important to develop that doctor-patient relationship. And I've been a lot in the United States. What I've seen that this is lacking in U.S. It's a very modern, every excellent medicine and everything. But doctor-patient relation is not good. They're always suspecting each other.
Yes. It's kind of like the priorities are misaligned. Because, you know, ideally in medical care, you want to focus on the patient's well-being and longevity and health, but yet when it comes to practice in the medical system, especially in the U.S., sometimes the doctors can be more focused on just making sure that, like you said, the documents are kind of aligned.
Documents are important, but I would not like to place so much of importance on documents and forgetting the patient's existence and that thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Me, in my practice, to interaction with the patient, how I talk, how I react, and how I communicate is more important than the documentation itself.
Exactly.
And to develop that confidence in my patient that he trusts me, I trust him. It's very important for me in my practice.
Absolutely. And that kind of connects to the hospitality topic, where it's actually really important for the hospital to be hospitable because the patient can then sort of understand sort of the nature of the disease or the nature of the condition they need to sort of focus on. Like, for example, have healthy practices associated with exercising or avoiding certain foods. And actually, I went to Mayo Clinic in Minnesota once, and that's something they really emphasize, this idea of patient education. But to have sort of the education, you need to sort of trust the doctor, be ready to talk with them about issues. So one of the things I'd like to talk about is mentoring. I wrote my dissertation on at Stanford and on mentors and how mentors help to sort of cultivate the creativity of really brilliant geniuses and technology. So I think to kind of wrap up our conversation, I'm wondering if you could tell me a story about a mentor that helped to really inspire you during your education or overcome a challenge.
Well, talking about mentors, because I come from a family where there are lots of doctors. My mother has 7 brothers. They're all doctors. They are married to doctors and their kids are doctors. Then my grandfather was a doctor. So when I grew up, I really did not know that one can do anything beyond medicine. I thought that was the only profession existing in this world. I could not think of anything else that you can become something else to. So there was not a mentor or anything, but it was like a circumstantial that I had to get into the medicine.
Kind of a community supporting your education.
Yeah, sort of thing. Because you see all doctors all around. That's one of the mentor factors, but not a particular mentor, I would say.
And they sort of served as a role model for you to
yes,
sort of...
Yes, I saw their life was a good life and they're doing something good for the people and how the people respect them. That everything when I was as a child acted on me. And you get a lot of respect in the society. People trust you, people believe you, people give you highest level of regard. These are all the factors which affected me.
And so even when you were young, you know, 8, 9 years old, you were starting to think of yourself as a doctor.
Yes, I've seen all these things since young. So that mattered a lot. Otherwise, I don't have any particular story to name of a particular person to tell you at the moment. The circumstantial was the factor which...
And then now you've been a doctor for 30 years now.
Well,
can you...
35 years now.
Can 35. Can you envision yourself, say 30 years from now, still a doctor helping people with their health?
I would love to, but then, you know, the age factor plays a role. I have definitely become slower than when I was.
I
was much more energetic. I get a call in the middle of the night, I could immediately attend, but now I can. I
right.
depend more on the telephone. But these are normal age changes, you know.
Right.
This happens. So,
and if
I take from time to time, as the time goes, you go with it.
And I'm kind of curious how you spend your free time. Do you go to the beach in Thailand, say Phuket?
Yes, if I don't do that, my wife will divorce me.
Yes.
So we go at least, if not once, sometimes twice a month to the beach. Then we go for movies.
Ah.
I love watching movies. And I don't like watching movies on the computer or on your monitors or like that. I like to go to the theaters. And
yeah, with other people around you. And
you, yeah.
And the big screen.
So I enjoy that. I love playing cricket. Because I did my basic schooling in London, so I have been playing cricket from the childhood, so I love that. These are the few things I do. I enjoy myself.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Singh, and thank you also for helping me sort of guide my health in more positive directions with the checkups. And I look forward to seeing you more in the years ahead.
It was wonderful meeting you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.